Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast.
Hi, today once again I have John Galloway, renowned hack for Microsoft, a disagreeable fellow with no known technical skills. John, how are you?
I think that about covers it. I'm doing great.
I just got tired of saying how great you are, so go the other way.
Right. Put that on my business card.
Exactly. So what have you been up to since last we spoke?
Well, let me see. I traveled around a bit. I think since last we spoke, that might have been before I went to, Estonia and Latvia and Lithuania and a bunch of places end of last year. And then early this year, I was busy with Build, getting ready for the Build keynote, helped out with some of the Azure keynote stuff. So that was fun. And then after that, I went on the Build tour, where I went to Moscow and London and Berlin, and then some other people went all to a bunch of other places as well, and kind of like a one-day recap of what was announced at Build.
Good Lord.
So then I went to NDC, and then I took a week vacation.
I'd like to see your frequent flyer miles. Well, I want to hear about some of those countries, but you said that you helped prepare the keynote for Build, and I have this image of you with a microphone behind the curtain and Scott Guthrie in front just moving his mouth. But is that how it went?
So most of the stuff I worked on was for Scott Hanselman's demo. And I mean, you know, you could basically put Scott Hanselman on stage with a Atari 64 and he'd keep the crowd happy. But there is a lot of work in terms of making sure that you, cover everything you want to say, that you show all the features and the technical stuff without making it seem rushed, and saying the right words so people don't jump to the wrong conclusions. And and then you also have to make sure that nothing can fail, including silly things like if you're logged into a website and it times out during the 40 minutes before Hanselman gets to talk, you know, which happened.
Oh, great.
So I'm not behind stage with a microphone, but we are sitting there. Me and some other devs are sitting there on the actual computers. Like, we've got the screens and we push buttons to switch to the backup computers. So he'd logged because we did the Azure stuff. That's all live. And he was logged in and the Azure session timed out, which is actually what you want. If you walk away from your computer for 40 minutes, you don't want someone else to come over and start doing stuff, you know. And so it makes sense that the session timed out, but then it also makes sense that we can't have that screw up his demo and make him type in his password and all that stuff on stage. Right. So we had another, you know, fallback computer, and we swapped him over and you know, handle all that kind of
and
stuff.
And he didn't miss a beat, I assume.
Oh, of course not. No, he's incredibly smooth, and he just talked for a few more seconds about whatever, and you know. But it's important to make sure all that stuff's set up so that he's sure that everything's going to work and doesn't have to worry about that. So that was really fun. We had, it was exciting and also a little bit more work this year because Satya Nadella was personally involved, reviewed the keynotes, all the demos and stuff a couple of times, had specific, you know, feedback, things he wanted changed. All of it made good technical sense, but then, you know, required more work. So we had, you know, we wanted to show web dev, but you know, we're showing both Azure and web dev, and then we also showed Visual Studio Code. And so doing all that in 10 minutes, you know, and then of course Azure is not just websites, it's also the back end for mobile sites as well. So we had a bunch of mobile clients. So yeah, we kept busy.
Okay, you just gave me at least three topics I want to come back to, but let's do them in reverse order. You had some mobile topics you wanted to cover. Mm-hmm. And today's headline in CNN was that Microsoft is laying off 7,700 people. And the way they make it sound is they're all in the mobile division. So as they say, what's up with that?
Yeah, well, so, you know, I mean, I can't really talk about the business stuff, and mostly because I don't know anything. But that stuff is in the Windows phone. And, you know, my understanding from reading headlines is, you know, it's Nokia related. What we were showing was just mobile development in general. Mm-hmm. So we showed Windows Phone. We showed the same app running on Windows Phone and on an Android. And we also had it running on an iPhone. We just didn't want to clutter up the stage with 90 different devices. But actually, we may have had an iPhone too. We built those all with Cordova, And so Cordova lets you write apps using HTML and JavaScript, and then has bridges to call into native functions. And, you know, people argue back and forth about whether that's the best, you know, native, you know, mobile experience. But for a lot of applications, this was a simple order details, kind of browsing through my orders and seeing the status. I think it's a great application of, you know, it's a great way to build an app and maintain it across multiple devices.
Well, it's clear. I mean, I won't get into the argument, but it's clear that if your team has expertise in web and you want to build a fairly straightforward application, that that is a great way to do it. If your team has more expertise in C sharp, and or there are things that you want to do that Xamarin is particularly good at, we need to get closer to the metal, then I might argue that it's worth looking at Xamarin. And Microsoft has a close relationship with Xamarin.
Absolutely. Yeah, and actually, and this was part of the changes as we worked through it, we built a Xamarin client as well. So we had a Xamarin client that ran on a Surface, and we had built it also to run on mobile, and we just decided to show Cordova, partly because Visual Studio 2015 includes really good tooling for Cordova. So when you run the application, you can actually do the document browse stuff, and you click on an element in your HTML, and you see it highlighted in the emulator running on Android. And they also ship a really fast Android emulator, you know, with Visual Studio, which if you've used Android emulators, you know, like on Windows, they can be really slow. Just Android emulators in general can take minutes to start up and all that. So this is actually a fast Hyper-V accelerated emulator. And so it was really fun, but then, you know, just we've probably already talked almost 10 minutes and we had to do the whole demo in 10 minutes and had to actually type code on stage. And, you know, so it's
intense.
A lot.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, another thing was with Azure, we were showing app service, which is they used to have web apps or websites. Azure websites was its own thing. And then some people were building APIs using web API and hosting them in websites. And people were also doing them using other Azure offerings and stuff. And then people are also, you know, integrating with other APIs, like say Dropbox or Salesforce or stuff like that. And then they had to write all that code themselves. So making sure that their API calls didn't time out, or if Salesforce changes their APIs, you know, how do you make sure that your application doesn't drop, or, you know, all that kind of stuff. So there's several, they kind of have one kind of integrated offering now. There's websites, there's API, you can write your custom APIs and plug in. And then there's also this logic app thing, which kind of makes it like building blocks. So you can take things off the, you know, that are pre-built for you and plug them together. So you say, I'd like to, you know, ping my SQL Server database, and when a new order is added, I want you to hit Salesforce and pull these fields, use this order ID to look up the Salesforce record, and then send a text message using Twilio, and, you know, just plug them all together. And it's built using all the kind of retry logic, and, you know, if it fails, it won't take your app down and all that kind of stuff. So
I love it.
Yeah, it's really kind of solves, it's kind of, you know, the standard kind of V2 or V3 of something. When first you say, here's this cool thing for building websites, and then you see what people are actually building with it and the problems they run into. And then this is kind of a, you know, building from that, from actually talking to customers and saying, hey, this is great, but look at all the code we had to write to work with. You know, can you help me out here? And so this is kind of that next step. So.
Yeah, you guys keep creating more and more building blocks at a higher and higher level, and I'm not sure what programmers will do for a living, but that's okay.
Well, you know, I mean, there's always custom code. And so, like, in this case, we wrote a custom API in ours using C#, you know, it's standard web API, so that this logic app can call back into our application and say, hey, is that order ready, and where is it supposed to be delivered to, and that kind of thing. I like building blocks, but I don't like it when they're kind of a black box and I can't get in there. And if it's not doing what I want, I'm just kind of stuck. And so I really do like that kind of escape hatch of, you know, I can write my own API if I want. So.
Yes. Now, you mentioned in passing a couple of things. Can we define at least what web dev is?
Well, you know, I tend to think of web dev itself as, you know, websites more. I don't know. There's
I can withdraw the question.
Well, no, the web, you know, it's a great question. I mean, there's web development has traditionally been HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and then whatever's on your server. Mm-hmm. And then over time, people have kind of broken that apart due to AJAX websites and you know, hooking servers together and mashing things up. Is that still the term? But, you know, the whole API movement. So then people are building these APIs and smaller, and they're talking about microservices. And, you know, so the idea of composing, you know, on the back end, your server, if I do something on my website and it calls back into the server, that's not just a simple, you know, page load event anymore. You know, it's my controller is now calling off to services I run, services, you know, other services on other, you know, companies, servers and stuff. And so the whole kind of web dev has definitely continued to grow in terms of what you're expected to know and do.
Yes, it's a little intimidating. Okay, let's go to something a little bit more concrete. You mentioned in passing, you mentioned Visual Studio Code.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that for just a few minutes. As I understand it, that's a development environment, cross-platform development environment?
Yeah. So it really solves the problem. So, of course, there's Visual Studio, which is a full integrated development environment. And it has visual designers, and it has, you know, debuggers that give you all kinds of, you know, information about memory usage, and there's things like IntelliTrace where you can kind of step back in time. I mean, Visual Studio as a product does a lot, right? But then there's also, there are a lot of developers that spend most of their day just writing code and thinking of code more as text, you know? And so you can think of tools like Sublime or Atom or, you know, so some of these more just kind of even something like Vim, right? Mm-hmm. That's more of just a text focused editor. And there's some nice things about them. One thing is that they start up really fast. They're very lightweight, you know, small installs. And of course they're also cross platform. So Visual Studio is nice, but if you want to run Visual Studio on your Mac, then you're running Parallels and the whole thing slows down and battery life goes out the window and all that. So, you know, it would be nice, especially as we're talking about, you know, making .NET itself cross-platform and ASP.NET 5 cross-platform. It's if we want developers to take that seriously, we need to have a development, some sort of development environment that works for them on Mac and Linux as well. So Visual Studio Code is a cross-platform code-focused editor. And it's built using Electron, which used to be called...
I'm sorry, it's built using electrons? That's good.
It is.
So are most things,
it's true. So Electron is the clever name that they've renamed Atom Shell to. So there's the Atom Editor from GitHub, and it is it's a hosting environment that runs Node and Chromium. So Node is kind of the execution engine, and then Chromium is the open source, the open source version of the Chrome editor. And so, you know, Chromium is the front end, and then Node is kind of the back end server system that's actually running the, you know, the execution environment. So they've had Atom as an editor. It's a free editor from GitHub. I really like it. I've been using it for a while. And so then they saw that people were wanting to build applications doing that same thing. They didn't want the whole editor system. They didn't want all of Atom, but they wanted the shell. They wanted Chromium and Node kind of, and the, you know, the stuff to tie it together and run it and make sure it doesn't crash and all that. So, they release that as Electron. And so Visual Studio Code is built in Electron. And so that's the hosting environment. But the actual editor is not using any of the Atom editor stuff. It's actually using, it's written in TypeScript, and it's using the Monaco. If you've been following this or heard of it, there's the Monaco editor that Microsoft's had for a while that they've used in Visual Studio Online. And even if you edit files in like OneDrive on the web, they have a really nice code editor there. And so that's about 200,000 lines of TypeScript. So it's a, you know, there's quite a bit there. So anyhow, that's the editor, and then that's running on top of this Electron hosting thing.
Good grief. And I say that in the sense that, as usual, there are significant improvements and significant exciting things, and I have no idea how programmers are supposed to keep up with any of it.
Well, the good news is, I mean, I'm a nerd, so I'll talk about, you know, I'll talk about the linoleum on the floor for a while, but, but, you know, the all you really need to know is it's a lightweight, quick install on Windows, Mac, and Linux. So if you go to code.visualstudio.com, there's a download for it, and it really is like, I've installed it over conference Wi-Fi in a matter of seconds. Like it's a pretty quick download. And it's a lightweight, auto updating thing. And it works the same on Windows, Mac, and Linux, which is nice. So, you know, I'll use it pretty often to make, say I'm want to make a quick HTML edit or JavaScript edit on a site, and I don't want to, you know, open up Visual Studio and, you know, I'm just boom on the go, make a quick edit, I'm done. And then I pop over to my MacBook, which I've been using more and more lately as I'm doing ASP.NET 5 demos, and I pop open Visual Studio Code and I know right where to go. And so that's kind of nice.
That's very cool. Let's jump up 500 feet and get a picture of what cross-platform means. And let me throw out a few terms that you've been using. One is ASP.NET 5. And I know we talked about this the last time you were on with Scott Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be great to quickly review what that's about. How tied into Windows 10 is any of that? And what kinds of cross-platform things can you do with all of this? So if you can give me a picture of how all those pieces fit together, that would be ideal.
Sure. Okay. So ASP.NET 5 has been built from the beginning to run cross-platform, so to run on Windows, Mac, and Linux. It can run on top of both .NET cross-platform, which is something that they're, you know, it's not shipped yet. It's still being built, but it is built cross-platform. You can see it on GitHub, and they're releasing code for it that will run on Windows, Mac, and Linux. And it's not just kind of like, hey, it might work. They're actually testing it and targeting, you know, building cross-platform. And it's an open source project, so they're getting contributions and discussion from the community about, hey, this isn't working on, you know, my whatever Ubuntu box, and here's my trace, and they'll fix it. So there's kind of the .NET cross-platform runtime, and then there's also ASP.NET 5 itself that runs kind of on top of that. So ASP.NET 5 is it's a web hosting system. And it can run.
Wait, let me slow you down right there. It's a web hosting system, because ASP.NET X has always been a framework for developing applications.
Sure, yeah.
And it still is. Okay, good.
Yeah. So it's, you know, it's a web framework. And running on top, you can run MVC 6 on top of it. That's the next version of ASP. Or if you don't want to, if you want to, you know, drop low level or just, you know, surf static sites or whatever it is you want to do, you don't have to use MVC. And it's really built to be a lot more composable and granular than ASP.NET was in the past. So ASP.NET in the past, there's a really big system.web DLL that had tons of stuff going back. It even includes stuff for classic ASP compatibility going back to the late 90s. You could actually rename an ASP file to ASPX, and it would run under ASP.NET. So
that's great.
It's pretty crazy. But when you think about, you know, that's been something that it's been a value Microsoft's had for developers for a long time, is we don't want to break all your stuff. We want to make it relatively, you know, at least possible to keep moving forward and adopt the newer frameworks and things. And so, you know, they wanted people to move from classic ASP to ASP.NET, and then from, you know, web forms was the main framework when ASP.NET shipped. And so there's a lot in system.web that includes all the guts and stuff of web forms. And so then over time, as you know, kind of modern web app dev has moved more towards MVC style and web APIs, and doesn't require, you know, some things that were in for classic, or, you know, for legacy support for ASP.NET. So the new ASP.NET 5 is kind of focused and targeted on the new stuff and stripping out, you know, over a decade of legacy and
So you just confused me. That's what I understood the last time you were on, and Scott was talking about starting clean and not mm-hmm. keeping the legacy. But I thought you said earlier, maybe I misunderstood you, that it was going to support classic ASP.
No, I was kind of describing the problem of system.web being this big DLL, and it was kind of a big ball of legacy stuff, and it was not, you couldn't just say, well, I'm building an application that only uses this and this, and I don't need all that other stuff. It was kind of like, nope, we're going to install the whole .NET runtime, and you're going to get all of system.web loaded in your application, and that's how it is. So now it really, in an ASP.NET 5 application, everything is a NuGet package, down to things like, including static file support or, authentication or, like for instance, Entity Framework now, if you want to pull in SQL Server support, that's a separate NuGet package. So everything's very granular, and you pull in just what you need and kind of only pay the price, and loading and memory and all that of what you need. And it's so granular that even .NET itself is pulled in as a NuGet package.
I hope you're going to provide a map.
Well, so there's the two sides to this. And when I do demonstrations of this, I say, do you want me to make this like simple and boring and not scary? Or do you want this to be like exciting, living on the edge and a little scary? Because I can do either of those. And what I mean by that is, if I do file new project, create an MVC application, create a controller, a model and a view, and hit F5, you would be bored. Like, it looks like it's looked for the past several years. Mm-hmm. It's standard MVC development and all that. When you then dig under the hood further, which a lot of app devs don't really need to do all that much, a lot of the time it's like, hey, I built my app, or I'm working on this controller and it's all working, that's good. So they really worked hard to make the top level application development experience the same, but then if you want to get down under the hood, then things have changed, and really they've gotten a lot better in terms of things that used to bug me, where I would be like, okay, I want to do this, but they've got their own handler and it's using this protected method and I can't override it and I can't, And so now it's really been kind of broken apart down at those lower levels, where if you want to get in and tinker and change things, it was hard before and it's really gotten a lot easier now.
That's very cool. I got to tell you just anecdotally that I have a good friend who was a ASP.NET programmer and mm-hmm. built some very complex stuff, and then lifted his head and saw ASP.NET 4 and MVC and some of the other changes that were happening in JavaScript and in the industry as a whole, and quit and doesn't program at all anymore.
Wow.
Just said, that's it, I'm done.
Well, there's always that balance. There's always the feeling like, what is it, the Red Queen or something, and you're always running so that you don't fall further behind mm-hmm. from Alice in Wonderland. So there's always that kind of feel. And in development especially, and definitely in the web dev world, that's where it's just things are constantly churning and moving and stuff, because you can deploy software as fast as you can push it up to your server,
I don't mean to interrupt you, but I want to go back to what you were saying about the Quest, before you go on, about the Quest platform mm-hmm. Visual Studio.
Yeah.
Now, I admit to be, the last 9 months I've been almost myopically preoccupied with Xamarin. But one of the things that they offer on the Mac is Xamarin Studio, and on Windows they offer Visual Studio. And a number of people use Visual Studio on Windows, even though it's in some ways less convenient, because they like the power of Visual Studio and they like using ReSharper and so on. Mm-hmm. Are you suggesting that those people will be able at some point to get the power of Visual Studio but running on the Mac?
Well, it's really important to like have the right expectations for it, because mm-hmm. I've talked to people, including people at Microsoft, and they're like, wait a minute, we rewrote Visual Studio to run on the Mac, and that's definitely not what it is. It's a code-focused editor. So if you're editing code and thinking of it more as text, then, that's really what it's good at. So HTML, CSS, JavaScript, C#, TypeScript, those are really kind of the, and Node, it's got really good Node editing support. So if you are spending most of the day in the text editor, you're not using all the advanced features of a Visual Studio as far as debugging and profiling and, you know, all that kind of stuff, then and you're comfortable with and you're familiar with, you know, editors like Atom and Sublime, then yeah, it's you might be pretty happy with it.
Right, but there's no built-in designer design service or a lot of the other things that you get.
Exactly. Yeah. So it is not just a text editor, and that's kind of, I think, the main kind of how I like to describe it is, okay, think of tools like Sublime and Atom. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Now really those are text editors that have some nice features for coders. You know what I mean? So for instance, IntelliSense in something like Sublime is really just autocomplete. So if I'm in a controller and I type the word home, it's going to say, well, I've grepped through your entire project and I found the word home controller. So I'm going to offer that as an autocomplete.
Right.
But what Visual Studio Code does, it actually has a compiler built in. It's using Roslyn and it's compiling the code. And so if I type something like this dot, it's going to give me IntelliSense for what's in scope. Or if I have an integer variable, you know, so I have in I, and then I say I dot, it's going to give me IntelliSense for integers.
Right.
Right. So, and so that offers also like support for things like refactoring. They're working on debugging support right now. So I tell people, think of it as something like Sublime or Atom, and then up a level from that. It understands your code. It can refactor your code. It can do a little bit more with it.
That is very cool and very appealing. And will be interesting to see how these different editors merge some or pick up engines from each other, especially with organizations that are very close to Microsoft.
Yeah, well, and now that you mention that, I mean, so Visual Studio Code uses an open source project called OmniSharp. And that is an open source project that was started by people outside of Microsoft that, you know, we definitely are supporting and happy with and, you know, trying to give them all the attention that they deserve. So, but OmniSharp is an open source project and Visual Studio Code uses it, but also Atom uses it, Sublime uses it. There are a lot of, so it's a plugin for these other editors. So they're doing some crazy stuff using Roslyn and just some clever code to provide these. So if say you're really stuck on Atom as an editor, and I don't blame you, that's a nice editor, then OmniSharp, you need the OmniSharp Atom package, and then it's going to give you things like refactoring and all kinds of stuff. Okay. So I mean, just a nice, I always like choices and more you know, more options. And so I'm definitely happy. I've got probably all the editors I've just mentioned installed, you know, so I'm
and when you're not there, they have conversations about how to overthrow.
Yep.
let me take you someplace that may be slightly outside of your comfort zone. And then I want to come back to Azure for a minute. But can you talk a little bit about VS 2015 and Windows 10 and what we should expect to see in Windows 10 with respect to developers?
Oh, gosh. Well, okay, yeah. So with the huge disclaimer that I'm, you know, that's not my expertise, and I'm more of a fanboy than, you know, an mm-hmm. expert. But I did go on the build tour with the with Giorgio and some other people on the DX team, and they were showing all kinds of cool stuff with Windows 10 and you know, some things I've been running Windows 10 on a laptop here. I'm really enjoying it. So some things I think of in Windows 10, one is definitely the kind of universal Windows platform story. So it really kind of has converged to you build an application using XAML and C#, using, you know, your tools you're used to for, and targeting universal Windows app, and it'll run on the desktop. It'll run on tablets, it'll run on phones, it'll run on Xbox, it'll run on HoloLens, like it runs everywhere. So it's that kind of thing that they've been slowly moving to over the years, and it's kind of finally here. So it takes a feature that I've really liked on the web for a while, which is this responsive design. So the idea is you write your code and you say, this is how it should function on this size of screen, this size of screen, this size of screen. And then you don't have to have this custom logic in your code saying, oh, are you on a phone? Great. I'm going to make these assumptions. Instead, your code just says, oh, okay, it's this narrow, it's this form factor. We're going to, you know, give you this kind of display. So universal Windows apps is definitely a big thing.
Let me just clarify. When you say universal Windows runs on all these platforms, they run on Microsoft phone, not, for example, the iPhone. And
yeah.
They run on Microsoft or Lenovo or whatever tablets, not necessarily on other tablets.
Yeah, exactly. It's a Windows platform.
Okay.
So that's some really cool stuff. And they you know, demonstrated some really cool features with that. There's some stuff online. I mean, definitely the build, you know, keynotes and things, those are online. And then there's also, I think some of the stuff from Build Tour is online too. So that's kind of better explained there. IoT is another cool thing. So the kind of Internet of Things support. So we showed at NDC in June, we showed, Damien showed, and I stood on stage and kind of cheered, but he was running ASP.NET 5 on Windows 10 IoT running on a Raspberry Pi 2.
Very nice.
Yeah. So, and a Raspberry Pi 2, I think, costs like $35, and it would fit in your pocket. And, you know, it's this tiny little device. So they have Windows 10 running, Windows 10 apps can be run on Raspberry Pi. And then because of that, you know, Damien was able to, and it took some hacking at this point. It's not super simple, you know, but so that's also a feature in Windows 10. And that's something that they demonstrated on this tour. And then also just generally some nice features for developers in Windows 10, like multiple desktops. So, you know, that's been something I've liked on Mac and Linux over the years. And you've been able to install some things, you know, some kind of third-party tools to do multiple desktops. But definitely as a developer, it's nice to say, I've got one desktop that's my Outlook and whatever Office programs, and then I'll flip over to developer mode and now I'm on a different desktop. Or
Yep.
So.
Okay. So you said, and once again, I got to catch these things as they go by. You mentioned that it runs on this and that, and just sort of by the by, HoloLens. Well, HoloLens.
Yeah.
you say HoloLens?
HoloLens.
HoloLens. Yeah. Okay. When do we get to see that?
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to be able to give you any answers on HoloLens. I have not actually been up close and personal with one yet. You know, they're still working on them. I just read something this week that there was a research program where they were, if you submit a proposal for a cool research project, they'll give you a HoloLens and like $100,000 to build something neat with it. So, but it's, you know, it's still something they're developing. I'm as anxious as anybody to see how much they cost and when I can get one.
They'll give you a HoloLens at $100,000?
Yeah, there's something here.
I'm getting online.
Yeah, so it's a grant program for research, and yep, they'll give you two development kits as well as up to $100,000 in grants. And, you know, it's a really complex machine. When people have explained it to me, you know, it's able to run without being connected to a computer. It's doing this, it's overlaying reality, and, you know, so it's tracking real world stuff in front of you, and then it's overlaying, you know, projected holographic stuff, which is the, you know, the name HoloLens, and it's overlaying it right on top. And from everything I've read, it's able to do it without jittering as you kind of move your head around and stuff.
Well,
so yeah, no kidding.
And the prime thing I want for it is, as people walk up to me, I want it to show, you know, I want it to show their name, their kids' names. You know?
This goes back to the who is that project?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. You know, Evernote has something very similar to Who Is. This is a side conversation we should have at some point. But yeah, other people have actually thought of that idea now. So, but we should have patented it.
It's true.
I suppose you have to make it work first.
You know, we did have people ask about HoloLens development on the Build Tour, and they were saying basically you can start developing for it now using kind of the you know, Windows 10 SDK stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you're basically building a Windows 10 application. And then there's some additional namespaces and things, you know, to do this because you're working with 3D and overlaying it on stuff. But it really is, it's a Windows 10 application, which is pretty neat.
So do you, I know that you work for Microsoft, and this is an impossible question for you, but do you have a sense that on some level Microsoft is back? That there's a lot of exciting new stuff coming out of Microsoft and a lot of innovation coming out of Microsoft? Boy, is that a softball question.
I do feel like it's become more clear what Microsoft's trying to do lately. And I felt like, you know, over times it's been either, you know, you've seen the cartoon where there were all the different divisions at Microsoft, you know, pointing guns at each other.
Yes.
The Microsoft org chart. And it definitely has seemed like that has changed over the years. And it wasn't entirely clear to the outside world when it started changing. And, you know, the whole thing about, like, Microsoft can say we love open source and we're, you know, but when Microsoft is actually, you know, like I was just reading today on Hacker News, Microsoft is the only gold level donor to the OpenBSD project. And, you know, Microsoft is releasing Office for, you know, for iOS and Android as well as Windows, you know, and so it's a lot of kind of some things that definitely started before Satya became CEO, but things are really kind of becoming more clear. And I see it more, and what I've always liked about Microsoft, and the reason I, you know, wanted to work for them was because as a developer, I want to write cool stuff and I want it to run in a lot of places and I want my development experience to be good and you know, my user's experience to be, you know, using that software to be pretty good. And so, like, I like the focus of Microsoft just making things awesome for developers. And as much as, you know, they said developers, developers, developers in the past, it didn't always kind of feel like everybody at Microsoft was kind of had that. And so there's, you know, they've been talking about, you know, Microsoft focused on productivity for everyone. And, you know, things like Azure being this kind of common back end to all your applications. And so I really just think a lot of those things are good. And I also think selfishly as a developer that Microsoft's focus is doing good things for me as a programmer.